For cybersecurity, research and development, and defense contracting, the Washington, D.C. region carries a lot of weight. Now that Congress has passed a 2015 federal budget, lots of companies are looking to see how cyber, R&D, and defense programs are likely to fare in the coming year. Jonathan Aberman has been looking into this. He's the managing director of Amplifier Ventures in Northern Virginia and the founder of the nonprofit Tandem NSI, which brings new companies to the federal market. He joins me now in studio for some analysis. Jonathan, good morning.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. So what did you see in the budget? Let's talk about cybersecurity first.
Well, first of all, I saw a budget process that continues to amaze with its wonderfulness. But more seriously, cyber clearly is a big focus now, and it, as well it should be. And there were a number of things in the budget that struck me. You know, you've seen, obviously, you're seeing DoD get increased emphasis, which isn't surprising, but what might be more surprising, listeners, is that places like Department of Energy or the State Department, even Department of Transportation, also saw some an increase in their budget for cybersecurity initiatives. So this is becoming a pervasive, and for your listeners and folks listening out there, this is a growing opportunity for companies and individuals that want to go after cyber. Were particularly important for our region. The first one is that there is this concept of creating a cyber campus, $35 million in the budget to create a cyber campus.
Was a big surprise. I think GSA had been asking for that. They put a notice out back in the spring.
That's right.
And that was funded, which was surprised me, I think.
Well, I think while it's a surprise, we should categorize it as a pleasant surprise, because for our region in particular and for the nation as a whole, there needs to be a place to bring the private sector and government together, because as you and I have talked about in previous shows, national security is now the edge of cyber in particular, but other areas of national security is really the private sector. And we need to have an organization or an institute of some sort that brings those together. So putting this $35 million aside for the cyber campus where you're bringing together DHS, DOJ, and private sector, if it's done right, it's a big deal. I think it needs to be in this region, whether it's in D.C. or Maryland or Virginia. I think it should be in Virginia because of the overlap there with the entrepreneur community, but it should be in the region someplace. This is big news for us.
Yeah, because Fort Meade, I think, is the model for this on the DoD side. They've got Cyber Command, and everybody's under one really big roof. In fact, I was up at Fort Meade yesterday. Gigantic place. I don't think you got to go inside to see how big it really is inside there, but they do have their people under one roof, and there's this idea of sharing and exchanging information. Contractors and employees would be together also, I think.
That's exactly right, and I think that that is a great model, and I believe that this cyber campus should be separate from that, because there is an approach to cyber when you're looking at the militarization and that type of use of force aspects of cyber that are very different from how, say, a banker or anybody who's managing personal information look at it. But the reality now is that cybersecurity is just as relevant. I mean, look what happened with Sony Pictures last week because Korea got upset about a movie that hypothesized that some producers would do something bad to their great leader.
Yeah, we've had some great examples of why this idea of partnership, I think, between federal government and private entities. We had the financial crimes earlier this year with, mm-hmm. with some of the big retailers. Now we've got an intellectual property crime of major proportions. I mean, movies, millions and millions of dollars ride on these movie scripts. Mm-hmm. Apparently some scripts were taken. And so it seems like the policy that's been in place and that's still developing of this information sharing and partnership kind of model, it seems to be the events are bearing out the wisdom of this whole effort.
Well,
this
absolutely.
Whole
look, the reality is that in our society these days, a lot of innovation happens outside of the government, and it happens outside of the government contractor community, and it's taking place in locations that aren't reached by traditional means, and that's going to continue to be a challenge. And so public-private partnerships like a Tandem NSI, something like the Cyber Campus, these are all important things. There's a lot more, and we'll probably talk about it in a little while. I've learned a lot about how entrepreneurs think about working with the government from managing Tandem NSI. Before I go there, though, the other thing I want to mention about this, the cyber aspects of the budget that were interested in me is there's a provision that talks about how the SEC should do a report on managing disclosure around cyber. And one of the things that's missing from getting the private sector really engaged is some sort of communication of what the standards are. Very important.
Yeah, so would that reside with the SEC?
Well, the SEC, and the SEC is often used as a nice hammer frankly, to get corporate America to do certain things. My guess is what ends up happening is the SEC will come up with some sort of requirements for mandating how you describe your cyber protections, which would then, sadly, not so sadly, result in shareholder lawsuits if there was a diminution of value as a result of an inadequate disclosure. It's a hell of a hammer if that's what they do.
I think a lot of boards of directors of companies are starting to look into the cyber risk of the companies they oversee because there is a real fiduciary risk there from cyber.
You're absolutely right. Look, people have been saying for quite a long time, and you mentioned early intellectual property theft, some of the estimates of the level and amount of intellectual property that has left American companies to Chinese hackers, for example, is billions, tens of billions of dollars. This is not a new piece of information. The reality here is that corporate America, companies like Facebook, Google, Home Depot, and so forth, are collecting unbelievable amounts of personal data about us. And, you know, in Europe, there are standards of care for how that information is handled. So far, those companies successfully lobbied Congress to prevent those type of limitations. Sooner or later, we're going to have a security breach that's going to result in either a massive crisis of confidence or something. And we need to get ahead of it now and make corporate America responsible for our privacy and our personal data, as well as their intellectual property. That's the other issue of cyber. It's not just protecting infrastructure.
All right. Our guest today is Jonathan Aberman, the managing director of Amplifier Ventures. And you surveyed some of the startup fledgling companies in the Tandem NSI network, and they had some things to say about whether they want to do business with the federal government.
As you know, we've operated Tandem for about 9 months now, and it's been a very successful pilot program, and we are funded for next year now, thanks to Arlington County and the Commonwealth of Virginia continues to support us. So it's going really well. And as we head into the end of the year, we thought it'd be interesting to survey members. We've got 2,500 or so non-traditional performers now. It's growing nicely. And so we asked them, well, what do you think about this world that we're in? And there are a couple of things we learned that were fascinating and I think are important to know. The first one is almost three quarters of our surveyed members think and believe that there are wonderful opportunities to work with the federal government in innovation. And I think that's tremendously good news if anybody's listening wondering, well, how will this Pentagon offset strategy work? Well, the answer is you have people that are clearly interested. That's the great news. The bad news is that they rate the current government efforts, all of them, you know, from SBIRS to R&D to contract reform, all of it, they rate it very low. Their general attitude is, you know what, these things are irrelevant to me. They're too hard. They're just not interesting. So it really does raise the question, not surprisingly, that if you're going to say the Air Force is talking about, hey, we need to do additive manufacturing, we need to do drones, we need innovation
Bob Work.
Right, Bob Work is talking about this as well. And the reality is that the Pentagon needs to have different modalities to get at these people. The other thing that was interesting is I said, well, okay, and I did this in a roundtable as well. If you don't think the government can adequately reach you, we've got this great government contractor community. Work with them as a conduit. And the answer is, oh, no. We don't trust the government contract community. We're actually quite afraid of them.
That's too bad, because when you look at the history of all of this, some of those big companies used to be entrepreneurs. I think the IT model for all of this is Larry Ellison at Oracle.
Sure.
He started that little tiny company, which at one time it was tiny, in response to a federal requirement for a relational database.
So, look, let's talk about SAIC and, you know, Mike Daniels and Beister and talk about it, Burisoff and BTG and Den DeYoung with Falcon and so forth. This community is full of tremendously effective entrepreneurs that grew government contract businesses. But the problem is that because of the way the whole FAR and DFAR works and the IDIQs and all these things that put the defense contractors in the place where they really have the keys to the kingdom.
A lot of barriers to entry.
Yeah, there are a lot of barriers to entry. And sadly, there are enough horror stories that circulate in the entrepreneur community about how an entrepreneur shares an idea with a government contractor and suddenly finds out that the idea has been taken from them. And the situation exists. By the way, when I did my work a couple of years ago for the Department of Defense labs, and I would go and talk with the lab directors, a number of them said their biggest issue was contractors would come into labs, look at things, and then go away and build something and sell it to the government. So as part of fixing this issue, it's not just the government that needs to be thinking about this. Frankly, I would highly recommend that the government contract community, particularly the larger ones, really think long and hard about how to properly get involved with innovators.
It kind of reminds me of that movie about the guy that invented the delayed windshield wipers, the guy that invented the ratchet wrench. You know, it fought with Sears for many, many years and eventually got a settlement in old age. So there is that danger of losing control of your intellectual property.
That's right.
And it's kind of sad because, as you mentioned, the DoD is now deliberately looking for the next wave of technology to give the advantage we need in warfare of the future.
As well they should. And by the way, the good news is that what I'm learning from Tandem is that you can bring government agency representatives into an entrepreneurial setting and have them interact, respond really well. We did a reverse pitch event 2 weeks ago. We brought in folks from DIA and DARPA and HSARPA, and we had 15 selected entrepreneurial companies show up and show off their approaches in robotics, big data, and so forth. And it was a very effective event, and some connections were made. There are a lot of really, really smart, well-meaning, and dedicated people in our agencies that want to reach entrepreneurs and want to reach non-traditional performers. And, you know, efforts like Tandem NSI, InQtel, and others are the way you're going to get it done.
All right. Anything else you notice in the budget with respect to R&D?
Well, R&D was held up very well, I'm happy to see. The agencies, you know, Air Force was cut a bit more than the Army, but they were cut a little bit. But overall, R&D is pretty much flat. The interesting thing to me was there was a greater emphasis on spending universities. So that's interesting to me. If they're talking about offset strategy, why they would increase R&D for universities and not increase it for reaching non-traditional performers. But I think that this offset strategy, this idea of reaching non-judicial sources, is lagging the budget. You know, budget gets set so far in advance. I expect over the next year you're going to see more and more emphasis on non-judicial engagement.
Of course, a lot of non-traditional performers sometimes originate in academia. They have such a great idea, they figure, hey, I can make some money on this. And so they migrate out of the colleges and start companies.
Yeah, you know, I've spent a fair bit of time working in tech commercialization in university settings. And what I would say is that ultimately R&D is great and it's important and 6-1 research is great, but ultimately you have to reduce it to practice at some point. And that's something that frankly, entrepreneurs and garage people are just better at doing than professors, as much as I'm a professor over at Maryland, as you know. Professors are great, but getting your hands dirty growing a company is very different from thinking deep thoughts.
All right. Jonathan Aberman is the managing director of Amplifier Ventures. Thanks so much for joining me.
As always, Tom.